Welcome to Both World Tarantulists with your hosts Kat and Martin. Today we dive deep into the captivating world of tarantulas and other invertebrates. So we'll talk about tarantula communals and even more. So are mixed species setups safe, or are they a recipe for disaster? And is it ever ethical to promote these practices within the hobby? We have a lot of opinions and experiences to share with you. So make sure to listen to the whole episode because it was a heated discussion and a fun one for sure. So let's get started. So before we start into our main topic about tarantula communals and the recent social media posts about it, we thought about maybe just ease into the topics because we are always very well prepared for our main topics, do a lot of research before we talk about them. And that's why we just, go with a little easygoing topic. Of course, there was somewhat irony behind there because most of our topics are not that really well prepared, but that's the fun of our podcast, I guess.
I agree.
So have you been to any expos lately in your area in the last 2 or 3 weeks?
I haven't been going lately because I'm pretty set on tarantulas and everything. I know, like, maybe there's a little bit of a need to go for feeders and stuff, but I have a pet store so close to me that I'm spoiled and I just really haven't made it out that way. But I know you've been because Petco decided to send a picture of you guys together. So I guess you guys are homies
Indeed.
Now.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that, but it was really fun meeting him, of course. He was a really nice guy, actually. Yeah, we've met at the show in Weinstadt in Germany. That's an expo which is happening like 2 times a year, always in autumn and in spring. And yeah, I'm not shopping for any spiders lately, but still I'll go there because of all the people there, because for over 15 years now, there's so many people out there just having a really good time with like-minded people talking about spiders, tarantulas, and other stuff. So it's always amazing. And yeah, this time some new faces, including Petko, who drove like all the way from Croatia. So he's one of the crazy Europeans driving many, many, many hours for like 10, 12 hours in total to just visit the single expo.
He is crazy. I will agree with you on that. And was that your first time meeting him, by the way?
Yeah, it was, yeah. We wrote a few messages on Instagram and stuff beforehand, but never met each other in person. Yeah, even though same continent, so it's easier to meet him than you, the other side of the ocean. But first time.
You're always welcome to come look for some Afonopelma over here with me, I'm just saying.
Yeah, it would take a little bit more time, but thanks for the invitation. I hope one day we'll make it over.
Travel all the way here to find some Afonopelma hinti.
So talking about all these different topics we have prepared for today, like, we should start with the tarantula communals.
Yeah, I'm not as fired up as I was the other day, but that post really... Oof, I had a lot to say.
So what sparked the initial interest in the topic?
So a vendor had posted that basically communals are not done enough in the hobby. And they were basically saying that YouTubers spread misinformation and that really communals can be done more often. We're just getting the information wrong. And essentially, I was going to ignore it, but I don't know. It just seemed really irresponsible and reckless of them to post that picture. It was, I believe, 4 different species of Peacelotheria all together in an enclosure, which wasn't even very big, by the way. And there was, I think, 4 or 5 of each species. So not only were we mixing species, but we had them, and basically it was just a Tupperware with a cork, and they were openly criticizing YouTubers for trying to do communals and doing them wrong, and insinuating they had this big secret to make it work, but their big secret looked exactly like a pretty mid enclosure, I would say. It wasn't anything special. Yeah. So I think what really annoyed me was the criticism that YouTubers don't promote communals more, which I think is hilarious because can you imagine if I posted a video putting four different species of Peacelotheria together, multiple specimens of each, and a tiny little tub?
Yeah, you would be canceled.
Can you imagine the outrage that would involve?
Yeah, definitely. You would be canceled immediately, I think so.
And rightfully so, because I feel like that's not something I should be promoting. Yeah. And although I do acknowledge and believe that Peacelotheria metallica communals can work, I have seen pokey communals work for a lot of people. I don't think that that's really too much of a challenge in general, as long as you accept the risks, because there's always risks. But when you're mixing four different species, multiple specimens each, and this little tub, I just don't see that going well, especially for my viewers. I can't imagine telling my viewers to try that and then getting the stories that would happen.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think we can totally agree on that it's not wise to mix species of. I think there will be or may be some exceptions in other like animal groups where you can keep maybe different frog species together which are not that closely related. I don't know, but certainly not recommended for doing it with spiders or tarantulas.
See, I wasn't even completely clear about your stance on that when I had brought this up for the podcast. So that's good to hear. I'm not completely out of pocket criticizing it, but I just can't imagine they'll all survive. And if they do, wouldn't they start crossbreeding, which is a huge issue?
Yeah, well, I think the pros of that is it's a like very, how do you say, it's a good raising method for juvenile spiders, especially the ones who tolerate each other in juvenile stages. You see that a lot with breeders of non-tarantula spiders, for example, all these different huntsman species you have in the hobby. Usually the breeders put them together in a tub and raise all the spiderlings in the very same tub, give them a lot of food so they do not prey on each other, but in the end, they grow very quickly and they then can separate each other, all these different specimens, without any loss at all. That I have heard that it also works on Psalmopeus species, like Psalmopeus irminia, the Venezuelan sun tiger. I have heard people using this method, like putting 50 or so spiderlings into one tub and raising them, giving them a lot of food. And these spiders grow very quickly and then they separate all the different specimens later on, but they're not communal.
They're all the same species though.
Yeah, indeed.
So I mean, I feel like that makes sense if they're all the same species, that juveniles will live okay together, but I can't imagine that that's natural or what they necessarily want. Not that tarantulas have like many wants, you know, but I just feel like they would prefer to be alone, so it's probably best to house them alone.
Oh, yeah.
For the average person, not a vendor or a breeder, you know, like doing what you said, keeping them in a tub together until they're bigger. That makes sense to me, but
definitely.
After a certain amount of time, you know, they prefer to be solitary and alone. And I understand that this person is a vendor and they probably bred some of those, I'm guessing. The thing is, the average keeper, they're going to spend, in the United States anyway, anywhere from 80 to maybe $100 on one of those slings. Do you really want $100 eating another $100? Like, that's a lot of monetary loss if that doesn't work out for them to consider. So just the weird criticism really threw me over the edge.
Yeah, definitely. And just to clarify, I'm not okay with this raising method for all these different spiders or examples I just mentioned, because in the end, it is somewhat of a like very similar approach to some python breeders out there in the reptile community. Just because you can keep an animal a certain way and reproduce it very efficiently doesn't make it the best way to keep them, right? So it sort of like reminds me of, how do you say, like farm animals, just to raise and to raise a production of these animals. And that's certainly not something we should do if we keep them as pets. So yeah, definitely not should be doing that, yeah.
That's a good way to put it, for sure. It's you can see how sometimes vendors start turning their tarantulas into more of an item for profit, and it starts cutting corners at that point, where the tarantula's well-being isn't their priority, it's the profit.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to hate on people for wanting to profit off their business. Of course, there's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, even for us making content about tarantulas, I can say there's been plenty of times that I didn't get a video done on time because something came up, an animal needed my attention, or I got behind on watering and I had to spend, you know, an hour or two watering all my tarantulas instead. I mean, their well-being, their care is going to come before me getting a video up for everyone, because they're the priority. And so I would imagine that that should translate over to vendors, that the well-being of their animals should be their priority before cutting corners and profiting off of them and breeding them and almost like exploiting them.
Yeah, definitely. But maybe it's better for some vendors to suggest to buy like 5 or 10 specimens of each species so you can house them in the same enclosure. So you do not just sell only one specimen, but you can immediately sell like 5 or 10 specimens because you can keep them in a communal. So that might be a reason. I'm not judging here, but just saying.
I'm all for like trying things out. But when it starts really coming at the expense of the animal, where there's very evident risks involved, I think it becomes pretty unethical and kind of slimy. I don't like that. You know, we gotta kind of call things out in the hobby and police ourselves a little bit, because imagine if an animal welfare person in PETA saw that. I mean, they already don't know anything.
Yeah, so definitely.
It's scary, you know, when we have people out here being loud and wrong at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. The self-policing aspect gets more and more important. That's for sure, yeah. But there are certainly spiders you can keep communally, just maybe not tarantulas. So, for example, the species you keep, and you have done quite a few videos on them, are these Eresidae spiders, like for example the genus Stegodyphus. This is a species you can keep communally. Have you done that before? I think so, right?
Yes. Yeah, so I did have the Dummicolas communally, and it went very well. I unfortunately ended up with a lot of males though, and the females, they didn't breed, so it kind of died out after a while. But they lived communally, they shared all their meals. It was very evident that this is a species that wants to be around each other. They webbed up together. They did everything together, you know, unlike other species. And in fact, that same genus has other like species that you shouldn't keep communally. And I know that when Tom recently got a couple different ones on import, people were suggesting they can be kept communally. And he was cautioning people, saying not every single species under this genus is communal.
It's not a genus feature, so to say. Yeah.
Exactly. And like in contrast to the Dummicolas, I had kept my Gandana minnow species Echinata babies together, and I really see them going at it and fighting each other. They don't web up together. They don't nest together. They don't like to share food. They will fight over it. And they all have their little hides in separate areas. So it's very clear to me that one of these species does really well together, wants to be together, whereas the other definitely does not want to interact and they prefer to be alone.
Yeah, definitely. So the Stegodyphus ones, I've never kept as a pet, but we were able to see them in Morocco in the field. So it's amazing.
Wow.
They are like, I wouldn't say dozens, but multiple adult specimens on the same net, and they make huge webbings across bushes. It's crazy to see. They have this thick net, very special and interesting type of webbing they make. And yeah, it's just amazing to see. That's a true, I will call, communal, kind of social spider, which we do not have in any means within tarantulas. Like, there are some tarantulas who tolerate each other, but to my knowledge, there is no record of tarantulas living communally in nature. Not with Pyxiloteria, and also not with the famous Socotran blue tarantula, the Monocentrobus balfouri. Even though we are successfully keeping them communally in the pet trade or in the hobby, there are no sightings or evidences of people visiting Socotra Island and finding them in nature. They only find solitary specimens. That's very interesting.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's good to know.
Yeah, I have a friend. He's from the Czech Republic. He's been there, I think, in 2007 and then again in 2012. So he's doing like research on insects for a university in the Czech Republic. And he, like, I wrote with him a few years back and he mentioned so many different localities within this small island of this Socotran blue tarantulas. They might also have some different, like, stable coloration traits. Like, he thought to believe that the species or specimens he found on the island, they had like different colorations depending on the altitude he found them, because the habitat was completely different. Of course, that's just speculation. But the most interesting part is only solitary specimens, never found in groups.
That's crazy, because I've heard people like say they observe their belfries like watching or guarding the other as it molts and stuff like that. I wonder if that's just a coincidence that they're just standing there.
Definitely. And of course, these nature, how do you say, evidences are just like point in time measures, right? So maybe a few months later they come together at some point. I don't know. I wouldn't say they're communal in 1 month in the year and the other not. But the interesting part is, just because we came into this communal topic and are now talking about Monocentrobus, I remember the days when they were first introduced in the hobby. It was around 2008 or 2009. And there were like big specimens coming in and people were like getting pregnant females from this island. And so what these importers or sellers or traders did, they removed the egg sac, right? So with every other species of tarantula, which is dead rare, you try to remove the egg sac after like 6 to maybe 8 weeks so you can make sure that this female specimen will not eat it, right? Because with this blue tarantula from Yemen, it was really important to not lose the egg sac, right? And so they removed it and they got these larvae. And they got nymphs and they all died. And I remember maybe 1 or 2 years, a lot of people had adult male and females and tried to get the egg sac right, but then they all died off. And one guy, I don't know his name, just left the egg sac with the mother. And then he found out that it is actually necessary to leave the egg sac with the mother, because the mother will feed the larvae and the nymphs. So maybe they are kind of social.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely some evidence that points that way for sure.
Almost like the Stegodyphus, yeah.
I think in nature, it's very different though, compared to captivity. And it's like when we're keeping them captive, there are things we can do to eliminate risks or minimize them. And so, you know, in nature, they might be eating each other sometimes. They might be living with each other sometimes. Mm. But if you're trying to make the most comfortable life for your spider, then it's more simple to just do what we know works.
Yeah, definitely.
And not cause unnecessary stress to them. But as for the belfry though, we do know that it works. So, I mean, it's hard to say, but I think it can be done responsibly to an extent. But I mean, that setup was just not it.
Definitely. Yeah, belfry does work great. I also have a group. I heard occasions that it does not work, or some like specimens get angry at the other ones and then some of them get lost in the process of it. But in the end, it's certainly the best species to keep communally besides all these Pyxiloteria, because they also tend to work, and there are also not many, or to my knowledge, at least, there is no evidence of adult specimens living together in the field and in nature. But it tends to work. I have several colleagues who keep them in big groups, also adult specimens, multiple dozen adult females together. And they breed, and they're fine. So it's very interesting. Yeah,
that's what I've heard, for sure. And I think there's even several YouTubers that do keep their, I think, P. metallicas together. And they've been doing it probably since I saw people making videos about it around the time I started even keeping, maybe 6 years ago, seven years ago. So, you know, there's definitely evidence out there that
definitely
works.
Definitely, yeah. So if you want to keep communally Petziloteria genus, then maybe go with the Metallica or the Formosa, and do not go with the Ornata or the Rufilata. These are both known to not go well in communals at all. So, but we do not recommend any communals, right? It's just, you can try it, but please only with species which are evidently working well in communals, not like the Holotele Insei.
Yeah, I remember when everyone was keeping those together and it never went well and they would keep trying and I'm like, this is not working, stop.
I did the same when I was starting in the hobby, like 16 years old. I thought, I'm sure I can keep them communally. But it did not work.
There were so many myths too, like people saying, well, you know, it's because you mixed the olive and the gold ones. Yeah. It can only be done with the olive ones, or it can only be done with the gold ones. And I'm like, this isn't working for any of them. Yeah. So no,
definitely,
thanks.
Definitely. What is interesting, though, this genus, they have a sister species in Colombia, which is not really, I think, in the US hobby, but we have some specimens in the European hobby, but they're very hard to breed. So you only see them from time to time. They have a really interesting, like this bumblebee pattern, more intense than the Insei ones. And we found them in Colombia on a mossy like slope, and there were, I would say, like 20 holes with a lot of webbing, right? They web a lot, so you can easily spot all these different holes. But they, each of them has their own hole and they're not communal. So I think at night, they will have some problems on that wall. I don't know.
I'm not really one to predict that. I think you'd have better insight there. Yeah,
not really. But I see how or where it came from. The idea that they can live communally when someone just documents, like it takes a picture of a wall of like 20 Neoholothele living together and they think, well, they might do well communally. But then obviously they don't, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of common sense, though, at the end of the day, that generally spiders like to be alone. They like to eat other spiders. I mean, their own food chain even as well. Like, I mean, brown recluse get eaten by wolf spiders around my house all the time. It's just, like, very evident that they prey on each other. So, yeah, I see it being a very rare thing.
Yeah.
That it works and that they live together, and especially it working in captivity.
Yeah, so maybe no tarantula communals to recommend. That's the conclusion.
Absolutely not. I can't even, like, before that post, I still was kind of like, no way. Like, I would never promote that because I can't even imagine sitting there and rehousing a whole bunch of P. metallica babies. I don't even like rehousing one of them. You want me to sit there and try to rehouse 10 of them? Are you crazy?
At the same time, in the same enclosure? Yeah, that's fun.
That's a big no for me.
Yeah. Good. That's about it, huh? Regarding the tarantula communals topic.
I believe it is. I think that we're pretty much on the same page.
Pretty much, yeah. Especially the page regarding multiple species or different species. Mixing together, yeah, definitely. That's a no.
I'm still stuck on the enclosure on that. It's just, you expect somebody who's hyping it up that much to have like a really impressive setup with like temperature readings and specific humidity and all this. And I know the secret to making this work. And then you see the picture and it's a tub with dirt and a cork. Groundbreaking. I'm so shocked and impressed.
Yep.
That's just me being a hater.
That's most of our, or how the tarantulas are actually kept, right? So it's not always a lot of detailed or mystical insights to get them started.
I think, like I mentioned, though, I think the criticism of YouTubers in general was what really irritated me, because there's always like a blanket, like, YouTubers suck mentality. Yeah. And I had responded on that post and they said, well, I'm not talking about you. And it's like, it doesn't matter if you're talking about me specifically. You go on YouTube right now and search Peacelitharia communals. There's plenty of YouTubers that have covered the topic. Yeah. It's, you know, and it would be so incredibly irresponsible for me to promote something like that, or for any of us to really promote something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, I just hate that blanket critique, you know, lumping us all together. I'll take valid criticism. Like, I'll take, if there's something that I did wrong or said wrong or could have done better, like, all right, I agree, you know, thanks for letting me know. But when it's something so wrong, it really fires me up. Yeah. Like, even last night, getting corrected, I made that spider graphic, why not to kill spiders. And I had somebody tell me to get my facts right because tarantulas are not spiders. And it's like, how can you be so incredibly loud and wrong and sassy about it? I hate when they're so sassy about it and they're so wrong.
That will not be the last time, I think, yeah. So for all of you out there who thinks you know it better or we have done something wrong, just leave us a comment. We'll talk about it, maybe.
Yeah, I get things wrong all the time. Like, I've only been keeping like 7 years. I don't know everything. I am at learning at my own
definitely.
Pace, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And
definitely. And you,
I've been pretty transparent and open about that. So I'll take criticism for sure. But when you're so wrong about something and so mean about it,
yeah,
it
you obviously do not know that tarantulas are not spiders, as we now have learned, right?
I was like, okay, are they birds? What are they, reptiles? They wanted to sound smart, you know? They wanted to correct me and sound smart.
Yeah.
And I even referenced, you know, things and brought out the science facts. And then they buckled down and said, oh, well, yeah, technically you're right, but the parameters are different. So it's really, they were like saying I was misinforming people by that. And I was like, you're putting words in my mouth. Like, now you're just making things up because you're buckling down because you were wrong and sassy.
Okay, it gets traction on your social media. Think positive, right?
I mean, that post is doing great, but not because of that. I really wanted to make some graphics just with like some pretty fun and simple facts about spiders to kind of get people to pay attention and stop killing them. And that was my goal. And I mean, it has done very well. It's got over 10,000 likes already. I just posted it yesterday night. So I'm glad the word's getting out, but it's going to always attract those people as well to argue. I mean, there's dozens of people in the comments arguing about brown recluse because I had mentioned on the graphic that brown recluse are reluctant to bite and that only 10% of the time is a bite medically significant. So we have everybody commenting, telling me I'm wrong. And they know somebody who lost an arm and a leg and a nose and a face and a head.
Definitely. But now you've done like a short regarding spider facts. Maybe this is somewhat easing into our viewer question from Alani. Maybe it will fit quite okay because he or she asked science and biology and how this affects husbandry is the question. Are there any topics you think that science and biology learnings from us humans about these spiders affect the actual husbandry of the specimens we keep?
You're asking if what we know about biology and their habitats affects how we keep them in captivity,
probably.
Correct?
I hope I interpret the question correctly, but let's try on it,
I think, for the most part, but once, like, there's certain things that we know about their husbandry, like certain arboreal tarantulas, say the T. celadonia, they like to make a trap door. Okay, let's give them a piece of cork with, you know, maybe a hole or something for them to make their trap door. So, I mean, we can observe things in the wild and recreate them in captivity as best we can.
Yeah, definitely. And it has a huge impact, especially with this example you just mentioned. That's the probably one of the best examples ever, because if you do not know that they build trapdoors in the wild and you just give the spider, I don't know, a piece of wood where the specimen cannot, like, build a trapdoor on, it will probably die. So
it's definitely important. But I do think that once we have been keeping them in captivity for a while, I think we can play around with it a little bit. And I think an example of that, this is just my opinion, of course, I don't expect you to agree, but I think with, like, say, the Phytopus genus, we know how to keep them and that how they do well. And then, you know, people now introduce cute little decor and stuff like that. Well, they like to hide, you know, you can put wood in there, or you can put wood in there and a little cute little piece of decor for them to build a home on too. And then you can start making specific things for fun that you think they'd like. And, you know, I think that's fun as long as it's appropriate.
Yeah, definitely. So I'll join the opinion that certainly it has impact. I think especially the natural history part of the science part, sometimes also the biology aspect of the spider itself. But as you mentioned, not so much probably the taxonomy stuff and the systematic stuff. So if a spider now has a new name because it has some distinctive features and is like grouped into a certain group of spider, that usually does not affect the way on how we keep it. But as you mentioned, observations from nature are really important. And there are so many people out there, like us hobbyists, are observing spiders, tarantulas in the wild and documenting them on pictures and videos and stuff, which very much improves our husbandry, definitely. There's also like a story of the Megaphobema or Optomegaphobema mesomelas, like the red leg tarantula from Costa Rica, the famous one everyone knows about, but no one really should keep them because it's so hard to keep them. But actually, if you just look at the environment they're in and replicate it, then you are able to breed them in captivity. You just have to do everything as they have it in nature. It's quite a kind of cold environment they need, kind of humid environment. You need to make sure you have a good airflow, that the humid air is not like stagnant, but still humid and fresh. And that's kind of hard to achieve. But if you do it properly and you maybe dedicate a whole room to it, you are certainly able to breed this species very successfully. So yeah, it all links together.
I agree for sure. I think that there are definitely some more complicated species that we need to pay more closely attention to, like the areas they inhabit, and kind of translate that. But I also think there's other ones that are so simple and thought almost like people like do too much almost sometimes. Yeah. Like I can see a false widow living in my corner of my house and spend its entire life in that corner. And it's fine, and it's eating, and it has its little space. But then you'll see people say, oh, that black widow is that enclosure. It's so boring. It's so small. And it's like, well, I see, you know, false widows in my home that spend, they have the freedom to go wherever they want, and they stay in a little corner. I would say, you know, my interpretation of that corner is definitely more complex for my pets, but... yeah. In the wild, they'll just live right there.
Yeah, definitely. So I hope, Alani, that somewhat covered your question. And if you're out there listening to the podcast, you or others, just feel free to put a new question into our topic or Q&A section within Spotify. I just recently learned that you can only do it within the Spotify app. So it's apparently a Spotify exclusive function. So if you're listening to or from another platform such as like Apple Podcasts, which a lot of you do actually, just send us a message, maybe on Instagram. Kat is very active on social media. She will get the message for sure. So yeah.
I don't check Instagram messages. Uh-huh. Do not.
So just leave a comment somewhere and we'll try to find it.
If you have a pigeon, if you have access to a pigeon, we can always write the pigeon question and roll it up and attach it.
Yeah.
I'll attach a little note to one of these cicadas and have it fly it to you.
Oh yeah, what's about with these cicadas? I just saw a recent story on your Instagram feed that there are like a million of cicadas in your area. I didn't know that within the United States you do have so many cicadas. That's really crazy.
So this year is a very special year for cicadas for us because we already have like annual cicadas that come every year, you know?
Okay.
And then every 13 years, we have certain broods come up. And then every 17 years, we have other certain broods come up. So some are 13 years cicadas, some are 17 years cicadas. And there's multiple of each of those, by the way. So right now in the U.S., a couple states are affected. There are the regular annual cicadas coming. There are the 13-year cicadas coming. And this year, the 17-year cicadas are also crazy. Coming from another brood. So this only happens about every 200 years where the 13 and the 17 will sync up and both come out at the same time. So there's areas overlapping. And my area is only the 13-year brood. But you can still see it's absolutely insane. They're everywhere. Wow. I mean, they're screaming outside 24/7. It's a lot. But I remember this happening 13 years ago, and I remember it happening when I was in kindergarten before that. Whoa. So this isn't my first time experiencing it.
Crazy.
But it definitely is a lot of fun. I've been having a great time, and I have some collected. I collected a whole bunch. And I put them in an enclosure, and I've been watching them molt, and I've been waiting for them to die so I can pin them, and yeah.
Awesome. Are they protected in any way, or?
There's actually people that will take them and fry them and eat them.
Yeah, interesting. We do not have any cicadas here in Switzerland, but we do have an insect which is, as you mentioned, very similar, only all 3 to 4 years. They have these swarms, so they have quite a long time to, how do you say, like from larvae stage to imago. So, yeah, they do not make any noise, but still, there are years, as you mentioned, like there are thousands of them. Really crazy.
I mean, you can't go outside right now without getting hit by one. I mean, they just fall out of the sky onto you, and pretty much every tree is covered in their molts, and it's just insane. If you go outside at night, you just see them all coming out of the ground and molting and molting and more and more. And what's particularly disturbing to me is I've found multiple of them crawling around with their abdomen completely gone, like a bird ate it, and they'll still keep crawling around just as if their entire half the body isn't missing. Oof. And my husband and I have been talking about this a lot because I've really, as an adult, been able to experience this differently this time, knowing what I know about bugs and stuff, and keeping them in enclosures and watching them. It's just amazing how not dumb they are, but they definitely have like one brain cell. And they have a mission, and it is to mate. Yeah. Like, there is nothing that they think about other than that. They will just, there's just no thoughts, man. It's insane. They're like little machines. Yeah. And even if they're missing half their body, they're still crawling around trying to find a mate.
Crazy. Crazy.
They're just, the ones that I've collected and put in the enclosure, they have no idea where they are. Like, it's insane. I don't even know how, I've never really experienced it this way before. It's just a lot. Very interesting.
Yeah, it sounds very similar to the May beetle we have. I just tried to translate it to English because it's just very simple. It's a beetle and it is able...
I've heard of that.
It's usually within the month of May, so it's called May beetle. Very innovative, I know, but that's the name. And so, all 3 to 4 years, they come in big swarms. And as you mentioned on your end, like when I was a kid, I remember huge swarms of them, like with really, as you just explained, you weren't able to go out without getting hit by one. but I haven't had that in the last, I would say, 10, 15, 20 years maybe. So, yeah, they're not that often anymore.
So, this is interesting. Sorry not to interrupt you, but I was actually, people have, Europeans who have seen my cicada post have told me about the May beetle. And interestingly enough, we actually have those too. They're called June bugs for us. I don't know if they're the exact same species. I doubt they are, but I'm Googling it right now. They look exactly the same. And we have those every year in mass, just tons of them. Yeah, May beetles or June bugs are usually brown, rusty, or black without patterns such as spots or stripes and hairy beneath.
Good.
So I believe they are actually like the same. But yeah, we also have those all the time. I mean, that's just like a yearly thing. Wow. And they're supposed to come out. They're called June bugs, but they come out in May for us as well. And they're just, I don't know what happens sometimes, but I'll get a plant that they're attracted to. And then there will just be dozens all over the plant and trying to take over.
Yeah, if someone's out there who knows a lot about these insects, I would say, then please feel free to just, get us onto the knowledge level there. I'm just Googling myself right now. So as you mentioned, there are different species on different continents. There's obviously a Japanese beetle, and there's the European bug and the US bug. So yeah. I don't know, but there are many different ones, and interesting to see how in swarms they come with like dozens and thousands of specimens, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, here every summer we get a ton of June bugs. That's normal. We get our annual cicadas, and then we also get lightning bugs. So I don't know if you guys get those, but they're like, they're actually beetles, and they're poisonous. You cannot eat those.
Crazy.
And their abdomens light up at night.
Crazy. Yeah, I remember.
Do you have like fireflies? Some people call them fireflies. Do you have like lightning bugs or fireflies there? At all?
In the southern regions, I think it starts like as you get closer to the Mediterranean Sea, then you'll get more like exotic insects. But I'm not really sure, actually. I've never seen it here. Yeah, I think in Italy might be one species, or like around the Mediterranean Sea, but I'm not so sure if we have them here.
Lightning bugs are very like welcomed here. Like they're not a bug. Like people have dreaded the cicadas and they always dread the June bugs, but everybody loves lightning bugs, and it's just so fun when they come out. Like Fiona, I'll just let her go out with an enclosure and make a little enclosure, put her lightning bugs in it. She'll catch like 10 of them, and I'll let her keep them overnight, and then we let them go the next day.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just put on the Google search regarding the May bug because I wanted to send you a picture, and in this article, which is from National Geographic, I just have to cite some of these things because I heard about it because my parents back when I was young told me that there were massive amounts of them, but I never realized how many of them there were. So in 1951, they have collected 1 billion animals of these bugs, and they made food out of it for animals. 1 million bugs in just 1 year. So it's definitely a change since 1951 in insect diversity.
Okay, so this is interesting. In the British Isles, the name, this is a funny name. I'm so sorry for whoever named this bug, but it's called like cockchafer.
Yeah, that's the I tried to translate it, but it's actually the same. Yeah. So I
am I saying that correctly?
No, it's an English word. It has nothing to do with the German word. So I don't know where this at least first part comes from. So
it says that these refers to more broadly to any beetles in the subfamily Melanthoninae.
Yeah, that's the same.
But anyway, then it says which are known in North America as June bugs, June beetles, or May beetles. So I believe it's the same. Like
could very well be, yeah.
Genus,
definitely.
At least.
And yeah. We turned the whole tarantula podcast in a May beetle podcast. So you see.
You know what? It's an exciting thing. All right. I like bugs. I love bugs. No way. Actually, I think it's kind of interesting because even though my channels cater towards tarantulas, and even though I mainly talk about true spiders, I also do a lot of insect videos, and those videos always tend to perform pretty well. Like there is an audience out there for insects for sure, because I've had some go viral that are just not tarantula related at all.
Yeah, they're probably more, how do you say, catering towards people which are not specifically interested in spiders, right? So I can imagine a normal guy or woman out there would watch a video about an insect rather than a video about spiders. They're more generally accepted, I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting. Good. So let's wrap it up. What do you think? We have talked about a few topics and are eager to hear more topic ideas from our audience out there. And for the next one, we'll prepare one or two, maybe three little topics to talk about. So there will always be something we can discuss.
Yes, sounds good. We need to discuss something that we don't agree on, Martin. That will be fun.
Yeah, well, for example, these colorful hides you make for all your spiders. So that could be a heated discussion one day.
You want to be a hater?
Oh, I am already, yeah. So that's okay.
You're like the least hater I know.
Yeah, true. No, but yeah, again, speaking to the people out there, if you have a topic, you know, we certainly, for sure, 1,000%, doesn't even make sense, 100%, we do not agree on the same topic. Send it to us, and we'll try to fight it out.
Hell yeah.
Good. So what is our next question for the poll? Because actually, we should go through the poll results really quickly. I sent you the picture earlier because for each episode, we try to do a new poll. So for this episode, we have asked which aspect of tarantula hobby interests you the most. And a lot of you have voted more than last time. And that time, it came out that most interested in care and husbandry, of course, and then science and biology, and then in the end, the aspect of enclosure design. So thanks for that.
Yep, I can tell that's mostly your audience, I feel.
Yeah, you would be more into photography, you said, right? And aesthetics.
I said I like the design, and I like taking pictures and making nice enclosures and stuff like that. I do like that aspect a lot. Good. I think with the jumping spider crowd, the enclosure and all that is a big part.
Yeah, definitely.
For them as well. But nothing wrong with it. It's cool to be a science nerd.
Good. So our new poll, I have an idea, but maybe you have one as well. So
I was going to possibly say maybe we should ask them if they're interested in all invertebrates or just arachnids.
Great.
But if you have something more engaging, that
perfect
could work.
We'll do that. Interested in all invertebrates or just arachnids? Maybe just give her two or three different options. We'll see. And then we'll talk about the poll results next time.
Sounds good, homie.
Good. Perfect.
Thank you for listening to Both World Tarantulas with me, Kat, and your other host, Martin. If you have any questions, you can call Martin at 1-55, and you can just... You can just cut it off.
Yeah. The best outro out there. Just send us private messages on our private address and private phone number. We'll be readily available 24/7, especially Kat, so perfect.
Don't show up to my house. This is America. That's never a good idea.
Okay, yeah, that's a different... We have to stop now. So thanks for listening. And see you guys next time. Is that something we could say? No.
I don't know. Peace out, Girl Scout.